everybody. Welcome to the After Further Review podcast. I'm Pete Doherty along with Eric Baranchek, and we're here to talk about the Packers' 31-28 overtime win over the Dallas Cowboys. We reviewed the film, and I'm also working on the column off of that film review. So, Eric, I guess we'll just start real quickly with the Packers won a game. No, the losing streak ends at 5. What do you make of it?
Shocking, to be honest with you. I didn't know that they would be able to put together an entire game where offensively they could stay on track with what their strengths are. You know, there's, you know, the 4-time MVP, and the tendency there is to, at least this season, is to fall back into the passing game. And even though they make good yardage on the ground and can keep things going, they seem to always fall into this valley of passing the ball. And they're just not there yet. For some reason, the offense has not clicked. Can't quite put my finger on it other than just hasn't worked. So it was what I thought was really impressive was when they were down 28-14 and they continued to run the football and continued to stay true to what they were doing. And that to me showed some maturity and some restraint, and they were able to do what they needed to do. And hats off to them. They did pretty well. They were able to pull out the victory.
They did. Part of me wonders, why did it take until the 10th game to really fully commit to that and do it?
Well, old habits die hard, right? It's really difficult. I think when you have, Aaron Rodgers, it's really easy to look past some of those things. Some of those things that might be obvious to you and I are not so obvious in the heat of the moment. And when you got 4-time MVP back there, we should wing the ball a little bit and show a little bit of a restraint. But they figured it out. And whether it be the play calling or the play calling at the line of scrimmage, what have you, they were able to withstand that desire to throw the ball and went out and did it and threw the ball as needed. It reminded me of some of the Packers from the 90s when Brett Favre was there and he would throw the ball 20, 24 times a game and they'd win a little bit more dominantly than this, but still they would win. And I think that's the recipe. This is the recipe that I think we also thought would be the case coming in. And certainly they held true to form and it was successful. Not to mention, I hope Mike McCarthy is on Matt LaFleur's Christmas card list because he certainly threw them a bone too. Let's not forget that.
You talking about overtime or something?
The fourth down call on overtime there. That took a little bit of pressure off the Packers and gave them some better field position where they can march down the field. They kick a field goal there, and now the Packers get the ball to 25 or the 20, and a little bit tougher. So
I thought his mistake there was if he knew he was going to go for it on fourth down, run the ball on third down.
Yeah, I mean, they were picking up 5 yards at the clip.
Yeah, I thought that was a big mistake because they were – running it right down the Packers' throat. If they hadn't had those two penalties on that drive, they'd have, they might have gone out and scored a touchdown even. So I thought that was a mistake. So, one of the lessons I've learned about from covering this league for 30 years is, try not to be a prisoner of the moment. That's really hard to do in this league when they only play once a week. And that once a week really makes an impression on you. But a team isn't always who they were in just their last game or their last couple of games. So I'm a skeptic. I'm a playoff skeptic and, they have a chance, of course, but I'm still skeptical they'll do it. What are you and I talked about this a little bit on the phone today when we talked, but what do you think there? They're 4-6. What? Does 9-8 maybe get you in the NFC this year,
Well, if they were in the NFC South, that would certainly get them in. I'm not ready to say this is a playoff team yet. I mean, the cards would have to completely fall. They're going to make it as a wild card team if they can make it. Unless for some reason Minnesota would just collapse, which they look pretty powerful, and they went into Buffalo and beat Buffalo in overtime, and that was a heck of a performance by them. And I don't know. This next game is a tough one, and so are the Titans, the Eagles coming in, or they have to go to the Eagles. But I mean, that's a lot of tough football just in the next 2 weeks. Not only that, you couple that with the fact that they're going to have the Vikings at the end of the year. I guess they can hope that the Vikings at the end of the year are going to pull their players, not play very hard, or the Lions give up. But those are two tough ball games it's going to be tough. They got to go to Chicago too. Chicago's putting up some points. So just in the division, I think it's going to be hard to reel out a bunch of wins. And Miami, that certainly isn't going to be a pushover either.
So let's get to the heart of what we talked about with our film review. We went kind of instead of going bigger picture, we kind of drilled down on one guy as for the lead item on this, and it was Yosh Nijman. And I really, watching the game live, trying to watch a lot of different things. I really didn't watch him much at all, but rewatching the game, because he's what jumped out to you. You think this guy has made himself some money in the last month with his play at right tackle, and especially last night?
Oh, for sure. He had a really tough draw with DeMarcus Lawrence, and then he had some opportunities to also face off with Parsons there. And I tell you what, there are a lot of teams in the NFL that would love to have a guy like that on their line. And you're looking at how difficult things were for the Packers offensive line this last stretch here, the last 4 or 5 weeks, 6 weeks really, was really hard. They didn't give a whole lot of time to the quarterback, especially the AB gaps were really susceptible to having guys in Rodgers' face. And the run game. I mean, one of the things you really like about Yosh Nijman is the way that he can – he's a big, big body, but he's athletic. He's not a big, soft body. He gets out there and moves in space, and he's able to be productive in space, get his hands on guys. You gotta like the way that he plays, and quite frankly, he's not just a guy that's out there because they don't have anybody else. When you looked at the beginning of the season when Jenkins and Bakhtiari were out, there were guys in there that they just didn't have anybody else, so they played, and that is not the case with Nijman. I think they did the right thing by playing him at left tackle and keeping him behind Bakhtiari, hoping that Bakhtiari would be able to be healthy enough to make it through the game. And when you saw them feel comfortable that Bakhtiari was going to be able to make it through games, they put Nijman over there and put him in the game and got him going. And they spelled Bakhtiari with Tom. So, he's earned the spot. He's definitely earned the opportunity to play. Because you look at the injury last year and you thought, hey, when Jenkins went down and Nijman went in, that it was – well, he's the only guy they got, so let's get him in there. And at this point this year, that's not the case. The case is he's a solid NFL starter, and certainly I'm sure his paycheck will start reflecting that in the near future.
Yeah, he's a third-year guy, so next year they control him for next year, and then he'll be a free agent after that. And maybe they'll try to do an extension with him, in the offseason to get him on the cheap if they can, although with their cap situation, they might have to wait a year anyway. One of the things that he does, if we just step back for a second, look forward to next year, there's a pretty really good chance that Bakhtiari is not on this team next year. He's week to week. They don't know. There are weeks where they don't know until, an hour and a half before kickoff, whether he's playing. And so there's a really good chance that they'll end up cutting him. And Nijman gives them a legit option to play left tackle if they don't find one, a guy who's ready to play, a draft pick who's ready to play right off the bat.
Well, watch me jinx him here now, but his most important ability is his availability. He's never on the injury report. He's not an injury risk. He is out there battling it. And that says a lot. And the fact that he did it last year at a pretty high level, after Jenkins went down, because we all sat around with our, and chewed on our fingernails waiting for the the next shoe to drop when this guy was going to get Aaron Rodgers killed, and it just didn't happen. So he's a young man that took advantage of his opportunities and got better and got confident. More importantly, he always was solid against the run, but against the pass was where certainly as a rookie and second year player that's where he struggled. I mean, you and I were watching him in camp, like, you know, kind of me more than anything mesmerized by his size and say, wow, you know, this is a big athlete. And but his pass blocking did not show it, but it looks he has worked into it. He's I guess when you look at him, what makes him a decent left tackle is he's got great balance, and he has ability to move his feet and keep his weight and his feet underneath him, which is really difficult because when you got those speed rushers and they come hard off the edge, it's really hard to get overextended, and that's when they give you the old hump move, and now the quarterback's laying there on the ground and you're standing there screaming, look out. So, you know, the other part I thought was really good about his play was he did get beat to the outside by DeMarcus Lawrence there. And he did a really heady play by grabbing him by the back of the shoulders and taking the 10-yard penalty rather than having, 12 lane in fetal position, you know, hating life. So, you know, those are things that come with age and come with experience. And, I really think that is a big role with their running game that they have. Five competent run blockers that are athletic and they can move. I mean, there's not very many teams in the league that pull their centers, and all five of their offensive linemen are at any given time can pull around the edge. And that says a lot about your offensive line, because some teams just don't have that luxury where they can pull guys that are effective and, more importantly, are effective at getting to the second level and picking off a backer. That's not easy work.
Yeah. One of the plays that jumped out that you pointed out was, and it wasn't – Nyman wasn't pulling on this one, but it was a toss to the right side. I think it was in the third quarter, maybe it was second. And he had Parsons lined up really wide. So, you know, it was, I guess, kind of a reach block, but there's no way you can execute a reach block on that. Parsons is too fast, and he was, you know, too far outside. But Nyman went out there and got a good piece of him, and that gave Jones the corner. And Jones ripped off 17 yards. I mean, that's explosive runs. The Packers, through all their coaching staffs for the last, 20 years or so, explosive plays are a 16-yard pass and a 12-yard run. That's a big run, and that's a good guy. Yeah, that's a really good – that's a great player he was blocking on that one.
Right. I mean, he was out in a wide nine and crashing in. And one of the things that's easy for an offensive lineman to do at that point is to turn his body so his shoulders are not parallel to the line of scrimmage. But by keeping his shoulders parallel, it forced Micah Parsons to have to be physical on the edge there. And that was enough. If he turned his shoulders and Parsons was able to push Nyman upfield, now that running back has to bend around. And now the longer that he's going east and west, or worst case, going south, is a more time for the pursuer to get there and get up there and make the tackle. So by keeping the line of scrimmage at the line of scrimmage and not getting repositioned by the defensive end man on the line of scrimmage, it allows them to get that corner. And that was all that it took. And sometimes, you know, this is a game of inches with really fast players, and all you got to do is give those guys a crease. And he was able to do that. And I think a lot of young guys, or guys who aren't very athletic, would not be able to get out there and make that happen. And then now it's, you know, what was 17-yard gain to, 2-3-yard loss. So, you know, those are the little things that you really, when you're first watching the game on TV, there's a lot of action things going on that you miss. So you got to slow the game down and watch and see the finer points of the way they're running the football right now. And at least against the Cowboys, which I guess the most impressive part, Pete, and you saw it too, was they were stacked 8 in a box. So a lot of times there were 9 or 10 guys based on formation, really close, packed in close to the line of scrimmage, and they were able to turn the corner on that and get some guts up the field. So that was a running performance. And I think, the quarterback and the head coach saw that and just did not give up on the game plan and continued to pound the ball. And that softens up the D-line and softens up the linebackers and slows down the pass rush. So now the quarterback feels more comfortable. And a lot of, think about it. It's just, you get bashful when you're getting your head pounded in every single play. But when you feel comfortable back there that the rush isn't getting you, not going to try and separate your rib cage from your spine, you can feel comfortable and make some throws. And some of those throws were long, you know, those deep passes, those take 3-4 seconds to develop. And they were doing a really nice job of maintaining the line of scrimmage. And a lot of that comes because defensive linemen have got to be able to rush the passer. And it's tough when they're running the ball on you. That little split second of, are they running it or is it a pass, is just enough sometimes to make those balls get out of there.
Yeah, it was sticking with the run against those heavy boxes and running it okay against those heavy boxes. I mean, that was the key to everything, because that opened up, you know, all those passes. You know, you second and six, third and two, you know, you can do anything on those snaps. So that seemed like it was a big factor.
Well, and you know, you hear Rodgers talking all the time about how he hates two deep safeties. Well, when they're running the ball like that, they can't afford to have two deep safeties. So when they were making those big long pay, like to those pass plays to Watson, that there were three of them, they connected on two of them, there was one high safety. And they guessed, you know, the Cowboys kind of guessed wrong. I don't think that'll happen again, but now someone else is going to be open. So that's the beauty of running the football, is you are taking it to the defense and you are making the defense react to you rather than you react to the defense. And you see safeties are going to get out of position. Linebackers are going to get out of position. I think you'll see more of that. If the Packers can have success running like they did last, and they've had success all season long, they just gave up on it. If they continue to do it, there's going to be more opportunities for them. And teams aren't going to sit back in too deep because they're going to run it through them. The problem that the Packers had in this last stretch, especially the five losses, is they just quit running. Just keep running it at them, and good things will happen. And you know what? They will beat you they've proven that they will beat you running the football. Now they just have to be consistent and they have to be able to maintain it. That's tougher, especially, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how it goes out. But in this game, certainly that the running game was the story. The play action pass was there and opened things up. And, you know, I don't know if they're going to be able to maintain this all year long, but it will be interesting to see how that running back stable holds up. You know, that's an awful lot of carries for that running, for a lot of ball touches by that running back. So maybe they feel better about it because they got the Hill kid back, and he's kind of a scat back, kind of a fast back. So if they do have to go a game or two without Aaron Jones, that they feel a little bit better about it now than they did earlier in the season when he was on IR. I don't know if that plays a role, but certainly I think – it would make a difference, you know, so how they attack games and how many touches they're going to give Aaron Jones.
So one of the reasons that I'm still not bullish on them actually winning enough games to get in the playoffs is they lost a week ago, they lost their best defensive player to an ACL injury. So they got by fine in this last game without Rashawn Gary, but week after week after week playing without him, that's where I think that's going to show up. But one guy, the other guy that we talk about in the column is Kingsley Enagbare. You know, obviously he's nowhere near Gary's class as an athlete, as a pass rusher, but he has locked down that, you know, basically it was number three, but now it's the second outside linebacker. What's he, what does he bring to the table at least that makes him a notch better than, you know, Garvin and Hamilton and any other options they have over there?
Well, number one, he's technically sound. He doesn't make technical mistakes. He stays in his gap. When guys are pulling, one of the things that is really difficult is you got this 300-pound man that's coming after you, and you're not blocked, so it's really easy for you to get upfield and then get. Then the offensive lineman barely has to touch you, and there's a gap right where you should have been. What he does is he stays home.
You're talking about on run plays, right?
Yeah, on the run plays. He stays home and keeps his shoulders square. So that C gap and outside run, you know, hitting the perimeter on him is a lot more difficult. The other thing, too, that is that I like, too, is when they do blitz off the edge with either a cornerback or a safety or the nickelback or a safety. What I like about him is he isn't just a selfish guy who's just vacating his gap and going down to another gap. He actually takes the tackle with him. So he's grabbing onto the guy. He's ripping and grabbing an arm, staying square so that inside gap on the run, if they do run it, is still contained and squeezes the gap instead of just running through it or running around it. That makes it easier for the guy who's coming off the edge in the run. It also makes it easier for the guy who's coming off the edge in a pass when they're blitzing. So positional player, very technically sound, not going to have the same kind of pressure that you're going to give to that Rod. I mean, Gary, statistically speaking, before his injury, was one of the best pass rushers in the league. As far as quarterback hurries and quarterback pressures and sacks, I mean, he was one of the best. So you don't replace that. There's not a guy on the roster that you can replace it. So it's got to be a sum of a bunch of pieces. It's got to be doing the right things up front so that your blitzers can get home. It's about staying sound on the run game so that it's third and five instead of third and one, or holding the edge so that safety can come up and fill the alley like you saw Rudy Ford do or Amos do several times. If you're the outside guy on the line of scrimmage and you're getting work downfield or you're giving up your shoulder, there's no opportunity for that alley player to come up and fill. So all of those little things take place to make a big play or to make a sound defensive play, and it takes them all. So if you're and against the running game, you know, the worst thing he can do is get hooked or get too far upfield. But he does a lot of things really, really good, just not great. You know, he's not going to – I mean, he's got a handful of sacks, and he's got a motor, and he's a competitor, but – you know, he doesn't have that suddenness or that speed that Gary has to be able to run a play down and run a quarterback down. You know, those are the things that you're going to miss. So you're going to need things. You're going to need guys like Jaron Reed when he gets one-on-one block to be able to win those games, to win those. You're going to need a couple more plays out of Preston Smith every game. And you're going to need when Clark gets single blocked on pass cover, pass rush, to be able to get to win it and get there. And when he's getting double teamed, to be able to at least drive the line back a little bit. So it's going to take, it's not going to be easy. It's not going to be one player. And certainly they're going to miss him. The big sack totals and getting the quarterback running around is all going to be really hard. But they can, the Packers can get pressure by blitzing off the edge and blitzing a, shooting a backer through the A or B gap.
Yeah. I do think that that's over the next, you know, 7-8 games, that's going to catch up to them. Just they're going to play a team where they just don't get enough pressure, and it's going to end up really hurting them. That's my guess, but we'll
I agree. Miami is going to be one. You got one coming up with Philly where a quarterback that's going to move around a little bit. Those are tough calls, man. I don't know if they're going to be able to get those guys, especially Philly, because Philly's defense is pretty good too. So they're going to have to get some stops on D, and they still gave up 28 points, which is a lot. So it's going to be a tough draw, that's for sure. I you know, they got this one. Good for them. You know, the one thing that Mike McCarthy proved is he's good at beating the Packers or beating the Cowboys at Lambeau, and he did a nice job of that. And you got to take some of that into the consideration to win and not to get too excited over this victory, but certainly a step in the right direction.
Well, we'll see what happens in the next couple of weeks. They're big ones. I'm looking at the clock here, and the sand has run out of the hourglass, so it's time for us to wrap this up, Eric. So, but thanks for the time, and for Eric Baranchek, I'm Pete Doherty. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in, and you've been listening to the After Further Review podcast.
Be good.